going to happen moving forward. So he just said, it's frustrating to him, but he just says his attorney, the corporate attorney, advised him just not to attend.
Okay.
But we're not going to obviously get into a lot of the particulars of that particular issue, but we can go over it a little bit. Obviously. But with that, let's go ahead. I think and get started because Bucky won't be here either. He asked to be excused, and Blaine, Sheriff Blaine Brashears, asked to be excused as well. So I think that's, I've got everybody that's here. So thanks for traveling in the somewhat inclement weather. It's not too bad out there right now. It's warming up enough to turn the rain now. Okay, so the first item on the agenda is approval of minutes of our October meeting. If everybody's had a chance to look through that or not. Any corrections? Any motions?
I move to approve the minutes.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. We have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstain? Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, opportunity for public comment? Seeing none, moving on, chair report. I'll just put my information into the RFP update. That's probably the most significant thing that's occurred since our last meeting, so I'll wait to that item. Meeting notes from FirstNet presentation held on August 30th. That's just a recap of the information that was provided. I'm not sure if any of your entities are getting asked any questions about it, but obviously FirstNet and AT&T, most notably AT&T is out there. I don't know if it's happened to any of your old people in your organization, but some of our personnel have gone to either extend their AT&T contract or going to an AT&T store. AT&T tells them about this great opportunity with FirstNet, and that you got to look at this, and this is what first responders are eligible to receive. The feedback I've heard from people is some people have looked at it and said, well, this looks great, maybe I'm going to switch providers. Other people have said, well, the coverage in my area of my current provider X is much better until you get to the point where your coverage is as equal or better than what I'm currently having. I'm really not interested in changing. And so I think it's one of those kind of things, because I've also heard some of the competitive companies, I don't know if you guys have.
Verizon's doing the same thing.
Yeah, and Verizon's out there saying, we have our own first responder priority network for you. You know, they're trying to couch something within their business plan that is somewhat equal to or like AT&T. We all know that AT&T has a contract. There are certain provisions that will come along with that contract that will, you know, proofs in the pudding in terms of the, when Gordy met with them and they went over the number of new sites that would go in the state. Predominantly, I think they were focused on rural Utah where coverage was lacking. And I'm not sure that there was a lot of enhancements or additional site towers going in along the Wasatch Front, but a lot of it was in the more remote areas where challenges with DPS needed to be improved. But in my opinion, maybe a few years down the road, we'll see how comparable this FirstNet service for first responders is compared to the regular commercial market. I don't know, I think to each his own. I don't know if you guys are seeing much in that regard, or many people switching because of it, or are they a wait and see look kind of attitude?
I kind of worry about the other commercial providers based on the fact that, you know, then you start creating these systems that are not compatible, and where everyone else is writing stuff towards FirstNet and trying to interface with FirstNet, then you may have, you know, people who think they can talk or exchange data or whatever in the future that
may
not actually be able to. So, you know, that's a little bit of a worry.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's yet to be seen or known. There's just some new things going on out there that we can't completely control. We'll have to see how that flushes out. But that's the notes from that presentation, so you can take back to your organizations if anybody has questions about FirstNet. The deployables fact sheet, we wanted to pass that along because that was given to us. And that's for the remote deployables, as well as if you read about their what was the acronym? The rapid deployment kit.
CALS?
Yeah, they have CALS, and then they have also this smaller unit where you can deploy and tie into and kind of have a makeshift network right where you're at if you have no coverage. Obviously, more to come on that as time transpires, but they're saying that they're readily available if we need them. For mass gatherings or for wildfire in a remote area, you don't have much connection. connection and all of a sudden you need it, that might be beneficial. But once again, it's just information we want to make sure that communication specialists have, so we know what's where available to everybody. So we want to make sure we pass that along.
Would it be worthwhile as a committee here to reach out to those who are in our community who are using it, or in our area who are using it, to get some feedback on their experience, positive, negative, who's using it, who's not, kind of just get an idea of what's out there? Because that, I think, will inform a lot of future decisions.
Right.
I know the fire department in our city has just started. I'm sure there's other entities that have it, but I don't really know who they are. And
I don't either.
Maybe we can share that across the whole region.
For Tooele, I know Bucky was the first in Utah to get FirstNet, AT&T, and then I think Grantsville Police Department went AT&T, but that's it, that I'm aware of. But I agree, I think it would be beneficial to know in each county who's
we're FirstNet.
Unified FirstNet.
Okay.
I know Orem City completely went FirstNet.
He goes
Verizon.
Logan City may have done
our fires. Our fires FirstNet. We're staying with Verizon. I'm with you because, frankly, I don't see any major difference. You're running on their commercial system right now. There's nothing special there for you right now.
With comms talking about, the only feature is that push-to-talk issue, right? That's the only thing that doesn't go from Verizon to FirstNet.
In the future, it's all the data. All the apps are being developed for FirstNet. That's kind of where I'm talking about, more data, not necessarily just the voice communication.
Yeah.
So that's my worry, is that
development, so that it doesn't talk.
Yeah, you've got these two separate kind of systems. You've got people writing for the Verizon or anyone else's network, and then you've got people writing for FirstNet, and they can't talk to each other. That's where I'm worried down the road, not today.
Don't you think until they make a significant hit into Verizon's network, whoever's developing them is going to make them for both Verizon and AT&T?
Maybe, but
do you think eventually?
I'm not worried about the developers. I'm worried about the entities who are using those. Your Verizon customers who are using their apps, and your AT&T customers who are using theirs, not being able to then share data on mutual events. Right? That was it's the dream, or the one of the big things about FirstNet is yeah, exactly, that we're not going to be able to shuffle stuff off and, oh, you're on Verizon, you're on AT&T's now. Oh, sorry, we can't share data.
I think it'll be forced just the opposite of what you're saying.
I think it will be forced
to go,
I hope so.
Just like P25 was forced, mm-hmm. to be an interoperable, regardless of what you're using to communicate. Because I think that FirstNet wasn't, the goal of FirstNet wasn't to isolate, but it was to open up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start to isolate like what you're talking about, then it completely defeats the purpose of communicating, across the night. We were talking to Verizon about that very topic, about push-to-talk, and they're like, well, wait a second. The push-to-talk that FirstNet uses is the exact same backbone as that the push-to-talk that Verizon uses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they can put some proprietary coding in it that will prevent you from talking to each other, but the backbone is the same. So if they really want to talk to each other, they can.
Right.
And it really, it's just a matter of politics at that point, saying, hey, listen, it's not that we're on your system or you're on our system, but our backbones can communicate because they're exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why we can't cross over. And again, you start talking about monopolies. FirstNet, in and of itself, is a monopoly.
They granted the contract.
That's right, a rented monopoly. And again, monopolies are not good when it comes to the consumer base. And even in our world, if we have competition, it gives us all better things. So I think what happened is Verizon said, hey, listen, we're going to build our own core with our own money. We're going to offer priority and preemption,
mm-hmm.
the same as they're doing. They, band 14 is this in 700 megahertz. They own all the 700 megahertz around band 14.
Mm-hmm.
Verizon already does. So they're saying, hey, listen, we already have we already have 700 megahertz. We're running it all the time. They run it today. And so, I mean, I understand they didn't get into the whole contract thing, but I think that you're talking about a behemoth of a company, and they're not just going to sit back and not do something to play in that realm.
Yeah.
Every time FirstNet comes up with a special project or a program, for people to get special pricing and stuff like that. Verizon comes in with their own pricing. And their pricing, as far as I can tell, is a little better than what AT&T's offering. So
For the private consumer?
For the private consumer. They just came out with a first responder package that if you're a first responder. Now, this is a misnomer, too, that they're telling people out there. One thing that kind of aggravates me with AT&T, they're telling all of their people that they come in, they say, hey, listen, you're a cop. I'm going to give you your whole account on FirstNet. That's not true. We'll put your phone,
but not your kids or your wife.
Yeah, right. Your phone will be on priority and preemption.
Right.
But they're selling it as they're going to give you your entire account. Well, we know that that's not true because that's not what the intention of it was for.
Right.
And Verizon has offered the same thing. Hey, if you come in and say, hey, listen, I'm a cop, they'll take your phone, your number that you show as your number, and they're going to put priority and preemption on that personal line of service. And they're going to give you special pricing for that. It's going to go back and forth. I think what they're ultimately going to do is they're going to give us the benefit of the non-monopoly type of thing.
I'm with you on the competition. I just want, at the end of the day, they need to be able to communicate.
And I agree.
Right now, they're not going to do that, and there may be some that may take the government stepping in and saying thou shalt, because AT&T, from their point of view, is going to protect all of their investment,
sure,
all of their
of course,
their stuff to. That they were awarded this huge contract.
And so they were also given a whole lot of money.
They are incentivized to not do that, to not let in the Verizons or anybody else. So someone's going to have to step in at some point and say, no.
Same thing with P25, Harris,
exactly, yeah.
Motorola, all the other companies were saying, no. I mean, for a long time, Motorola wouldn't do anything with anybody else.
Yeah, right.
They were forced to do it by the federal government, say, hey, listen, P25, you're going to have to be able to use, no matter what radio's out there, you're going to have to be able to use.
I think the key is that public safety has to keep demanding that, whether you're a Verizon customer or an AT&T customer, that you can talk to anybody in an emergency,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
not just the people on our own network.
That's right.
And if we keep pushing it globally, they'll have to comply.
Yeah.
Like $9 billion or whatever it was that they gave FirstNet is a drop in the bucket. They knew, I mean, Verizon and AT&T knew they were going to have to sink a bunch of their own money into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're still using private funds to build this network out. $9 billion ain't going to get it done. And you said there's only going to be a few towers here in Utah.
And that's
all they're going to give us.
When they explain what improvements that we're making in their infrastructure in the next 5 years, which is kind of the telling of, if it was going to be dramatic, you can see that there would be a lot of money and they're going to make vast amounts of improvements. And frankly, I think what public safety was looking for is that they're not struggling so much. I mean, obviously during a mass casualty, during a major event, University of Utah, some of these things when you have mass gatherings and stuff, you can overload a network in a system where you have poor coverage. But for the most part, most public safety entities are functioning. They're not saying, I can't do my job because
right.
I can't
right.
use my phone, my radio
right.
system's working. And so when you looked at what improvements are going to make, the amount of investment they're going to make in Utah as a matter of this national contract, it's not that significant. The most significant, I think, from the state perspective, was just to focus on like I-70, some of those areas where poor communication capabilities, poor now. Anyway, there's nobody out there, there's not enough customers, no
it's
business to drive it.
Because
why put a bunch of money in a place that's not going to get the return? And so that's really what's driving the market, regardless. And so
we on this board aren't going to see much of a change in improvement until we travel up to remote areas. Because
right.
they're going to improve our cost of service, maybe 1%.
Right.
But they're going from 0% in areas to at least 5 to 10%
right.
in areas our constituents like to go play.
Right.
Although
and
we
so
will
overall,
see 5G
public
soon.
Safety is going to be better off because there is coverage in the mountains and the trails above
right.
the land.
Absolutely.
You know? So overall, we do benefit
right.
everybody.
Yep. Well, it forces Verizon to do the same.
To do the same thing.
They're
going
to
exactly.
have to do the exact same thing because I'll just tell you right now, Verizon just came to us. They're putting a tower in at our Pioneer Precinct building, putting a brand new.
Right in.
It's going to look like a big old pine tree in our parking lot. But only they're putting it in, not just for Verizon. It's multi-carrier. It's
mm-hmm.
going to be accessible for that tower to put AT&T, everybody up on it. Only Verizon's putting the expense to put it in so that everybody gets the benefit of it. And I'm sure AT&T will come in and drop their radios on it, and everybody else will, T-Mobile even, I'm sure will come in and plunk a bunch of radios on it because it's beneficial for everybody, and they understand that public safety first and foremost, we'll get the benefit out of that. They're doing, everybody has to do it. And I think if we keep down that path and we hold their feet to the fire,
yeah,
just like the California wildfires, they held Verizon's feet to the fire because they started throttling their accounts. What they turn around and come back, they killed the throttling. Nationwide, no more throttling on public safety accounts. I mean, they're in writing. We will not do this.
It just takes a disaster to get results,
yeah,
right?
And unfortunately, that's what it takes.
Somebody killed or disaster. Yeah.
Right. But we have to hold our feet to the fire, yeah, and then we're going to have to do the same thing for AT&T or anybody, any other.
Exactly. Well, conversely, I know Verizon, they've already done that on their public safety plan that's competitive to the FirstNet, because I talked to the rep last week, and we moved all our phones over that are on Verizon, and now, because of that, we essentially have 25 gigs but no throttle at the end, and if it goes over 3 months, then they'll call us. But so essentially, it's 3 months of unlimited. So they're all standing up, taking note, and being competitive. So the FirstNet is a great sales pitch for AT&T at this point. But all the others have seen where they're lacking, and they've stepped up.
Yeah. So it's certainly been a catalyst to improve service for all.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah,
that's capitalism.
Yeah,
at its best.
Well, does anybody have any questions or concerns? Would anybody want to see somebody like Shay come here and show us a demo of any of this stuff?
Have you guys seen them deploy a
and you said a little small kit mobile thing. I'd never seen that mobile kit before. I don't care either way, but if you want, I could call Shay and say, hey, would you come and put a demo on for us if people were interested in seeing what it's about?
AT&T deployed a CAL for us during the Elizabeth Smart.
Did they?
Because our command post was down in the Memory Grove area, and the cell service was going right over the top of us. We had no cell service whatsoever, and they came in and dropped a cow right at the top of the right next to the Capitol, uh-huh, and pointed it down into the canyon, and it flooded the entire canyon with their coverage, and we had tremendous, and they literally had it done in about 45 minutes after we called for it.
Wow.
It was pretty fast.
Pretty quick. Yeah. And dramatic, the signals on everybody's phones just went.
Yep. So, I mean, they're pretty phenomenal what they can do. Verizon has a whole bunch of staged cows here. T-Mobile, I believe, has some. The major carriers all do have the...
Which surprised me that their response time was up to 14 hours.
Yeah.
Well,
that's to cover themselves.
Yeah, I don't know if they have stuff staged here or if it's coming from...
Most of them, a lot of the ones are actually staged in Colorado.
I thought it was Colorado.
But they have a couple here staged.
Yeah. For FirstNet?
I know Verizon has them staged here because they have their main switches here. Yeah. And West Shore, one of the main switches.
I think the other reason to have them maybe do that demo is not just to see the bells and whistles, but also just for us to be aware of what they are, can and can't do, and maybe we use them, or we encourage similar entities.
It may be worth a demo.
If we're paying attention to them, maybe they'll be more responsive to us.
Knowledge is a good thing.
Yeah.
Verizon held a public safety seminar, I want to say a couple months ago, and I attended. I was one of the only law enforcement that were there, which was surprising, but evidently their communication didn't go out correctly. But I know that they do have a lot of technology, and it was in their parking lot for me to explore. Maybe we could do both vendors just to be aware.
Verizon has offered to show us their switch and everything out in West Jordan.
Where's that at?
It's just in West Jordan. It's out on the west side of West Jordan out there. Big major. I don't know. I've never been out to it. You just kind of described where it was. That's their main switch for this western area.
For me, it probably wouldn't hurt. At least from my background, if people ask me questions about it, if I could articulate the knowledge base of what really is the difference between going AT&T and sticking with Verizon or my existing carrier, what really are the substantial differences in terms of benefit, function, cost, I wouldn't mind knowing that. Do you want me to reach out to Shay?
Especially if we open it up as well.
Yeah, if you want to work your group, I'll work on the first net if you work on the Verizon.
Oh yeah, we can get Janet to come in.
And maybe just have a demonstration.
Both of them in the same room talking about which one's better. That'll be fun.
No, right?
I'm pretty sure we've tried to do that. I don't think they will.
I wouldn't think they would. Yeah.
Probably two separate meetings and and if somebody from FirstNet and AT&T wants to come and talk about it, that would probably be great.
There's an amazing amount of law enforcement folks that have no clue what person that is.
Yeah.
I'm surprised when they actually, I sat in a room with a whole bunch of chiefs and they thought FirstNet was this all-encompassing, worldwide, special network that was built specifically for it was, and well, no, it's on the AT&T network. And they're like, huh?
Yeah. What it is and what it isn't. Yeah, there's information overload. There's just not enough time for everybody to get all the information. I've had probably 5 or 6 discussions on FirstNet. We've gotten to a couple of different presentations and still not completely sure of what it is and what it isn't.
Yeah.
The salesman telling you, but I get a firefighter coming in and says, yeah, I went into the AT&T store and they told me they need to come and talk to all the firefighters. So they're using it as a manipulative tool to try to sell their goods again. And wait a minute.
I had a whole bunch of my officers come and do the same thing. Hey, I just signed up with this FirstNet thing for, and my whole family gets priority and preemption. Are you sure about that? You may want to go back and figure out, well, I had to show them my badge and all this stuff, and they had to verify who I was, and I go, yep, they do. And I go, it'll be your line that'll get priority and preemption, not your entire family.
Do they all get the lower rate, though?
Well, everybody gets the lower rate. It's an account.
It's just the priority.
It's just the priority and preemption and all those specialized things that are specifically for that officer or firefighter's personal line.
So now we have a stipend through employment instead of issuing us funds. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on that side of going to the carrier and saying, well, I'm a firefighter. And I'm with Verizon, so I went to Verizon and they said, oh yeah, you're eligible to have a reduced rate, you know, mm-hmm. first responder rate. So I just did it this last month and signed up. And what's weird is just send us an email and then we'll verify you're a first responder. And I still haven't heard back of how they're going through to verify that I'm truly a first responder. But they said that my bill will drop about, for two phones, will drop about $20 a month. So we'll see. I'm right in the middle of waiting to see if
that's pretty substantial savings.
Yeah. $20. It was going to be good for two phones, unlimited data and voice for, I think before all the taxes and everything, around $85, $90 a month. Before I was paying $120, I think. So we'll see.
And my question to Shay was if they build this up and they don't control who is in that and who is,
you know,
they're going to clog it up and then everybody's going to have it and then it's not going to even be worth it. So that was one of the questions I asked when they came out, and they said that they're going to have a contact per county or something. Who wants to take that assignment?
What he told us that we would have to do is like I'd have to designate a person in our department, and then if I retired within that first month, I had to let them know that I was no longer employed and I'd be converted to their regular
rates.
System. Yeah.
But really, who's going to do that? It's going to be the entity that's going to have to go reach out and say, these people are no longer with our...
You had to have a point person for FirstNet in your department that had to keep track.
Who that has to keep that maintained and
who's
not it?
Who's
not
one
not
more thing.
It.
Another clerical thing that for somebody to have to take care of. Yeah. But that's what he was suggesting when he came around and did all of our talks to our chief's organizations in here. We'll see. But good discussion. But I'll reach out to FirstNet and ask for them to come do a demonstration. That was Verizon. That'd be great. Okay, the RFP radio update. I can't say a whole lot about that because I'm not sure what I can and can't say. I sit on the RFP committee, and what I've been told most recently is last week is that we went through this process of determining the evaluation, and we went on a couple of reference checks, one up in Canada, one in Indianapolis. We came back and we went through a process of doing our ratings, and the UCA staff and state purchasing went through. And at the end of the day, after putting in all the factors related to the point value system, the functionality, technology, and price, Harris ended up being the winner of the RFP process. And that was taken to the UCA board, and the UCA board approved, to my knowledge, I wasn't in attendance, but to move forward to begin contract negotiations with Harris. I'm not completely sure everything was mentioned in the board meeting, but what I can tell you, I believe I can release this information, is the difference in cost was quite significant.
Since John's on this committee, should we have this discussion in the closed meeting? Whatever we say is going to be in the minutes.
And that's why I'm being really careful with is they they've told me there's not anything I can say, even in a closed session, except that in what was said in the public meeting of UCA.
Specifics, yeah.
Yeah, so what I can tell you is that the price was significantly different, and because of that, that really drove the decision in which direction the RFP went to. And I wish, I don't know, did you call into the UCA meeting at all?
Well, the public broadcast that's on the internet, that anybody can listen to, they actually gave a specific amount.
Did they say it?
They did.
Okay, good. And so you heard?
I did listen.
And you've heard the difference in cost?
It was a huge project. It was $30 million difference.
Wow. Okay, good. Yeah. That's public
information. Do we know how much the total was then?
But I don't know what the total was. I just know that there was a
10% or 5%.
Yeah, that's the key.
It was just that number that he gave.
Dude, that was the specific number they gave. That was the difference between the two bids.
And it was significant. $30 million was significant.
That's real
in difference.
So my concern, though, what we're going through dealing with Hexagon now. I mean, are they going to be able to deliver what they promised?
Well, you guys went on,
a lot of us went on site visits and everything looked rosy right up until they tried to make it work. And so I'm concerned whether we're getting what we're really paying.
And I have that, from a generalized concept, this has nothing to do with the evaluation committee sitting on it, but when you go in to buy any commodity for anything and you're selling me one, and there is that much difference in cost, it at least causes you to pause and
look a lot deeper.
Are they the same? Mm-hmm. Am I buying the same commodity? And that's just a generalized comment. And I think the board is, you know, concerned with that as well in the discussion they had. I think there was some board members that were just saying that without getting into the details of it, just saying, wow, that's significant.
Motorola is notoriously overpriced.
Right.
Notoriously overpriced. I mean, the whole cliche is you can buy better, but you can't pay more when it comes to Motorola. I mean, I love the Motorola guys. I got guys that are housed right in my building with us, and they're great guys. But Motorola's tendency of being on the Hexagon project, for per se, Motorola came in and bid on that project. And they were substantially more money. For honestly, not that much more capability.
But look where we
are. They sell their reliability.
Can I comment on that reliability? So in Twilla County, I've got almost 30 years experience out there. And years ago, we'll say, without giving a name, vendor X came into Twilla County and they sold us a product that was less than. And how do you put a price on officer safety? Because side by side, Motorola was hitting dispatch and Radio X was not. And, you know, I don't know. I know you guys did your due diligence. I'm not sure who is part of all of that. Oh, I thought, Carl, you were. So, Chief, I appreciate that. But in rural areas like we have in Twilla County, there is a difference between Twilla City, downtown Twilla City, and Terra. And our radios that we purchased, P25 radios, supposed to be compatible, supposed to work. Radio X is not doing the job. Motorola is kicking butt.
Right.
So I don't know how we put a price on law enforcement like that.
About $30 million, I think.
Okay, there's the price tag.
Sorry.
It's even more than that, though. Think about how much existing infrastructure they already have, too.
Exactly, because there's PSAPs around the state of Utah that have already purchased the Motorola MC7500s. So there's already hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in Motorola. I gave my last quote to UCA was in 2015, which was a little bit less than $1 million for my PSAP to go. But look at how well the Gold Elite stood the test of time. I've had my Gold Elite radio since 2001, and they're still charging away. We're replacing a system that's been going for all of those years. So,
and we have Astros.
Reliability and officer safety.
Yeah,
I don't think that the 30% on pricing should have been that high.
Well, and what I
not 30%, 31.
I'm sorry, the 30% weight. What was it? That right? 30% on was
oh,
the weight.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
Pricing. Yeah. I'm sorry. Price. I think that
weighted
that was
on the
high.
Scoring.
I agree.
The pricing was a 30% weighted value.
Yeah, weighted value. Thank you. Yeah,
and I can tell you that those terms, those rules were made for us on the evaluation committee. So I had some similar concerns, but at the end of the day, state procurement and UCA have their responsibilities, and we as a committee had our responsibilities to do what we did in terms of the evaluation. But I echo what you're saying in terms of something that's always been reliable, always worked, and at the end of the day, I want to make sure we're getting better, and meaning as equally reliable, as great of coverage, as great of quality of speech, as great, you know what I mean? My expectation is that we don't take a step back, we take a step forward. But I have my worries because, once again, I've been on my entire career has been on one system, so I have to say this as a bias, not as an RFP evaluator. As a bias, I've had so many years of something that has worked flawlessly, and I've never, ever questioned its reliability. It's just always worked. It's been the greatest walkie-talkie system anybody would ever have wanted to have, and it's got to be there. We all know that in public safety, it's got to be there. And I said that in our at the end of the day in our evaluations of our technical stuff is that for a police officer who's involved in a domestic situation, high-speed chase, the coordination of radio transmission amongst good guys has to be there. Same thing with a fire. If we have a mayday situation, I can't have people not hearing. What do you say? What's going on? Is life and death depends on it. It's got to work. But at the end of the day, some people came from vantage points that I deeply respect, but they talk about the technology moving forward, the growth of use of data and all of that. Yeah, that's all fine and dandy, but that does not save a police officer or firefighter.
Nope, it's that.
No. It's that.
Mm-hmm. That thing that clicks you into
communication.
Yeah.
That's the basic fundamental that never changes. You know, even before we had the 800 megahertz system, when we had just, the 150 and we talked with the power of one radio to another, that's what made us effective or not effective. And so I worry about that.
It's not just when the system fails either, because when there's little failures, I don't know if you've seen this, when I was in Richfield, we bought cheap radios, and they lasted 3 years, and we went back.
Yeah.
But we found workarounds. I mean, rather than call on that radio, we had an officer that had a construction company, we'd call each other on his channel rather than, because it always worked, and you could hear it, it was more clear. And so pretty soon you're doing police work on a public frequency, and none of it's recorded, and none of it's...
Yeah.
None of it's part of the official record.
We actually figured out where in the areas of Twilla County were the problem and just did our very best to avoid them as much as we possibly could. I-80 at exit 99, a deputy couldn't hit us, but a trooper could. Right. Difference between the Radio X and Motorola. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right there. So
it's kind of right now in UCA's hand. What I can say is that what we were told as of last week, last Thursday, Friday, the board approved to move forward with contract talks. So, and I think that UCA director and deputy director know how critical the contractual negotiations are in terms of ensuring that this system will do what they say it will do, and they're getting what they believe they're getting. And so that's one piece of it. The second piece is that as of last week, Motorola did file a protest. And so, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I think that's, in my mind, that's healthy, because if it causes a pause to really dig deeper into some details and determine that, everything's been, all the I's have been dotted, T's have been crossed, and that's for our protection to make sure that whether you go with somebody that's $30 million less or $30 million more, you're doing it for the right reasons. And I think it's out of our control.
Yeah, it should never be based on the money.
As an advisory committee, can we write a letter or a resolution asking them to take careful consideration of the safety factors and be sure that the system will work as promised?
And can they look at areas that have picked Harris? For example, we border Nevada, Twilla does, and Nevada picked Harris, and their price did not stay the same. It went up, so I don't think that it's
that.
Have they got the contract?
Now you're asking me to talk about something that I can't talk about. But because it was within.
We assume that other systems and other places were involved in the process of evaluation at some point.
I would think it would have to be. I mean, that's a normal RFP process.
Yeah, within the norm, if you read the RFPs that were submitted, those elements were asked about.
Yeah.
They were discussed.
I'm sure they did site visits and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I mean, that's just a normal.
Yeah, we went to Edmonton and looked at a Harris system. We went to Indianapolis and looked at a Motorola system.
Well, the LDS Church, they went to Harris. they dumped more mobile into Harris, and the first thing I said to my radio guy, I don't know if you guys know Andy Kupti, you know Andy.
Oh, yeah, Andy, yeah.
I said, Andy, we've been working with the church for a long time downtown. I said, just give them a call and see how things have gone on their employment. Because that's one of the things that I ran into with the Hexagon project. You know, they can promise you the world, but if their deployment strategy is horrible and their customer service is terrible and all of these kinds of things, I don't care how good of a product you have, it'll kill it. Mm-hmm. It'll kill the entire project if those things aren't happening. Ryan can attest. I mean, if they're not deploying the product in the right way and they're doing it really backwards and screwed up and you're having to redo things over and over and over again, then are you really saving the $30 million bucks? I mean, ultimately you're going to end up paying it some other way. So
the money can't be the reason. I think it's beneficial to look at money already spent on some of the infrastructure that was already built by Motorola too, and maybe consideration on that, because that was taxpayers' dollars paying Weavers, Salt Lake, who else? I don't know. I know Doug Way, our federal agency in Twilla County, has MCC 7500, but they're small, maybe two position. But there's money, there's taxpayers' dollars that have already been spent. So when I did listen to that board meeting, and that was, you know, they were very happy about that, saving the $30 million, but what did we already waste? Or what have we wasted?
Yeah, well, and I guess if you do the math, if you, the theory on something like that is if the proposal was $30 million more using
our existing equipment.
Was it?
It is.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because they weren't going to change out Salt Lake's Astro. They're all P25 Astro consoles. The airport just bought all their brand new Astro consoles, P25, ready to go. There's a lot of other PSAPs that haven't bought theirs. They're still on the gold elites, but
I just don't think we can wait for 4 to 8 year build out either.
But there are still $30 million more.
Is it a 3 year
using their
Paris?
Existing infrastructure?
A 5 year build out.
Five.
Oh. Yeah, I don't. There's no way.
And they haven't decided on where they're going to start yet or anything.
Right. Within the RFP, it addresses some of those things, and that's part of the evaluation factors. But once again, that's like any RFP of this magnitude, a proposal versus if that's going to be the final, obviously that would be one of the other elements that would be negotiated, because one of the strategies could be is this doesn't make sense from an interoperability to start here and go here and have this maybe a line of demarcation where this phase is turned on and this phase isn't. That might work really well in a remote part of the state where there's not much interoperable issues along that line. But if you do that along the Wasatch Front, you know, this county is not going to talk to this county for this period of time. Wait a minute, we need to talk about that implementation plan because we cross over way too much. So all of those.
That's when the price goes up, right? That when you start changing that.
We sat, and if we were there as an RFP committee reviewer, and then now it moves to that phase of all of those contractual negotiations, as well as now dealing with the protest, and that won't be under our job. I think is done in our thing.
One of my big concerns with this thing is that we have in excess of, just for the police department, over $3 million worth of equipment that we have to buy just for users. That ain't going to happen in 1 year. We were thinking, hey, it'll happen over a period of about 3 years. You know, 3 year process, buy out our get our Apex radios and change things out, and so we're ready to go. And we're buying all of our new stuff with P25 Phase 2 already in it, ready to go. Day one, turn it on, up and running. Problem is now, if Harris comes in and builds it, I can't buy a Harris radio up front because it won't work with my current Motorola system.
Exactly. We're the same boat.
You're stuck. Yeah, you guys have the same.
We're doing exactly the same
thing. Huge number. And so that's one of my big concerns is that, you know, we kind of had a plan. We could work with the city. We could get our equipment filtered out over 3 or 4 years and have everybody ready to go for day one for the switch on. And now we either have to buy the Motorola equipment because it will work on the repair a system for P25. But again, now you got Motorola, they're not happy. So do the prices start going up on the Motorola equipment now for Utah because we're going with the Harris system? Whereas before, just before this whole thing came out, the prices were going down. I think maybe in anticipation of us moving to this new Motorola system. So there's all those kinds of concerns that are out there now that, you know, and $3 million just for the police department, that's not to include the fire department and some of our public services.
Police officer user equipment.
Just for a radio in the car, a radio in the on the belt. $3 million.
We even had the first net replace all that.
Well, that's something that and it maybe is appropriate for us as a committee to talk about, because one of the questions I asked the UCA representatives, I said, so what, you know, it's within our footprint, Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City's in our footprint, and so it's, I guess, under our purview of discussion, but if Salt Lake City, what if they make a decision to say, we've got so much invested, we own so much already, we may not convert? Or does Salt Lake City say, well, because this, you know, the whole taxing system and the state gets the funding?
Well, they've already decided they're going to move to UCA. They are moving on.
You are moving to UCA. Okay, so you will move
with this project. Well, yes, we have our own radio system in Salt Lake. And we have P25 consoles ready to go in our district PSAP. Problem is that all of our citizens are being taxed the same as everybody else's.
Right.
So they're being technically double taxed.
Twice.
It's pretty hard to explain to your citizens that your cell phone's already getting hit, and now we're going to hit you again on your property tax and other places and pull out revenues to pay for our own system. It's pretty difficult to quantify that and even to justify it to your folks.
So you guys will be not like in your own radio business anymore. You'll just be part of UCA.
Part of UCA. We'll have our own radio techs in-house, and we'll still work with UCA
to maintain,
you know, City Creek and some of these other.
Because you have towers that you own.
We do.
That you'll take care of and maintain. So I know we have one tower that we maintain, but we don't. UCA takes care of their equipment.
And UCA is already up on the hill with us at City Creek because it's one of their main points where they can get into Davis County and Weaver and down south too from that City Creek point. And so we'll still work with those guys and they'll take over. I mean, we got our equipment in their trailer, whatever the heck that building is up there. UCA owns. We already have some equipment in there, so it's already been going.
And financially, it only makes sense because you're paying for it and they're collecting the dough.
And we got one of the core switches right now in the building, so for the state.
Are you able to share what the church security said about their experiences?
What church security?
No,
we just barely digging into that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we just barely found out about it. I mean, we found out about it when you guys did when they announced it. But again, I wasn't part of the thing. I don't have any idea. And I was with you. Well, we just went through this whole Hexagon thing.
Yeah.
I want to kind of, I mean, I have somebody right here in our own backyard that I can kind of poke around and ask how that went for you. How did it go? What were some of the pitfalls? You don't have to give us all the details, but were there pitfalls that we need to be aware of as we move forward? Church is not a small thing.
No.
They have a pretty substantial radio system themselves. And so they can probably tell us if there were some pitfalls there that took place.
And I don't want to sound over dramatic, but the decision we made in a boardroom like this, but it's the officers' lives that are at risk more than probably any other tool we use is that communication device.
It's
and they're the ones, and when they see it not working, they're going to either take shortcuts or they're going to badmouth the system and everybody's going to hurt.
All I can tell you, and I will tell you this, Corey Lyman from Salt Lake was on it. And that guy has a lot of knowledge when it comes to radio systems and stuff.
He's been working
in this stuff for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And that was one of his big things. That was his number one thing, was that when you push that button, that guy's going to get someone on the other end.
Mm-hmm. He and I were like the two people from the actual field. The rest were mostly technical folks.
Yeah.
That were really pushing about just the basic fundamental reliability of what the system's going to do for us. It's not, you know, I don't care. care about all the data and what it'll do one day, and if it'll go, you know, LMR, LTE, and it'll do all this and I'll do that. I keep thinking, what does that do for a firefighter or police officer in the field? You know, maybe all that latent information is helpful, you know, all of a sudden one day you see a robbery suspect and you get it on the MDT in every police car within 30 seconds of the robbery occurring. Okay, great, that's really nice, but talking on the radio is still one of the most critical things that's necessary, and it's got to work now. So we stress that, I can say that much. It was a significantly important element. I guess yet to be seen what really transpires from here in terms of the contractual negotiation, when they get into the nuts and bolts of it, and all of those elements in terms of how that's negotiated, what our change orders, how our change orders done, what is it to do in terms of, you know, cost escalation, those kind of things, functionality, all those kind of things. But basically, I mean, we also, as part of this process, I think I can say this, is there was us as an RFP committee, there was the UCA folks and the state who were watchdogs over the procurement process, and then there was two persons that were part of a private consulting firm hired by UCA to assist in evaluating the RFPs to ensure that they included what they included. I mean, some of that, you get into some of that jargon, and if you're not into it knee-deep every single day, it's like a different language.
Oh, yeah, you'll miss it.
You don't even know what they're talking about, or the name of what they call it.
Experts compare the models of the two companies to see if they're...
Right. They call it this does this thing and this does that thing, and what, I've never heard of that terminology and that acronym, and you're trying to, you know, your head's just spinning trying to understand what you're reading through. And so we needed their help to also say that, you know, these, you know, first and foremost, are they substantially complete, responsive bids? And so there's been a lot of work gone into it, but I think there's a lot more to go into it than the final. Hasn't been done yet because you've got a protest out there, plus you've got contractual negotiations.
And that's where the big that's where the big protection lies, is getting the attorneys to actually put the right language in that it specifies all of the things it has to do and puts the responsibility on the company to make sure those happen or they repay back everything.
Yeah. What happens if it goes wrong?
Yeah.
And I think UCA going into this, when they briefed us, they anticipated either a protest or lawsuit or whatever coming from one or the other, depending on what happened here.
Of course.
Yeah.
That was inevitable.
This is a big enough project that, I mean, we're talking about the entire state of
Utah. Yeah.
Utah.
I mean, you had lobbyists working for those companies up in the hill in terms of when the funding was created and making sure there was proper influence to ensure that there was a fair process being conducted to allow fair competition to occur. So that, yeah, it's we've got a lot of eyes on this issue.
Okay.
Yet to be seen. I wish I could tell you more about the specifics of what we did, but right now they said because there's a protest, then we can't discuss any of the elements.
Well, I trust your judgment, Mike. I just don't know if I trust everybody else's judgment on the committee. So.
See, that's why I base it on what Corey was telling me, what little he can tell me, but it's like, look, Corey's telling me that they went through and they were adamant about certain things and they really took care. Mm-hmm. Again, Corey said, he said, look, the money didn't really concern me.
Right.
The money piece of it was other people's concerns, not really mine. Mine was, is it going to get, was it going to get from point A to point B and get that guy or that gal the help they're going to need at that moment that they need it because they're having a really bad day and they need someone there yesterday. And they need to know that that's getting through, and that was his big concern.
Yeah, at the end of the day, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, is that you read and you ask questions and do all this work, but what's hard to ignore is, and this is my own bias, is I've worked on a system that's worked and done exactly what you said it's done. And the proposal is to go to a different entity that believes they're going to do the exact same thing or better. And whenever you do that, you know, it's, do you know for sure?
You could get bit. Trust me, we know.
We know.
You
can get
bit. It's always high risk. Yeah.
And you can do all the work, you know, advanced work, but
you're going to miss something.
Until it's put in. And that's the scary thing, is because you kind of commit to going down a road with someone, and now you've committed. Because at the end of the day, you know, saying have the greatest contract written and it says we can back out, we're not going to pay you, we can do something else, you've still invested a number of years in trying to make sure this.
And the back out isn't like, oh, our money's back. It's like 5 years of litigation.
Oh, right, exactly.
You're going to fight us for it.
Yeah, years of litigation, and then what do you do to also fix it going forward? So you get like one chance.
Yeah.
And that's just having my name on the RFP committee. It's one chance to make sure we protect public safety and we don't step back when we go forward.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a big responsibility. And so, yeah, Corey, a lot of us, we spent a lot of hours trying to learn and understand as much as we could about it to try to make the best and fast decision.
Thanks, Mike.
$30 million bucks. That's big.
That's not a drop in the bucket.
No.
That really isn't. And you got to wonder, listen, Motorola had a huge infrastructure here already. Yes, some of it's going to have to be updated, but there was a lot of it that was already updated that is part of this contract that is going to have to be re-updated now with new repair stuff. So either Motorola is just gouging the heck out of us or they missed something, right? Or Harris missed something.
Yeah, that's the concern. It's not apples to apples.
Yeah, without seeing the details, you're asking the same question I think everybody would ask when you see something of that difference. It has nothing to do with Motorola and Harris. It has to do with if you had two, anybody putting something in and there's that much difference. Like, are we getting gouged or are we not getting the whole banana?
Yeah, so they're missing something and these guys are gouging the heck out of us. One of them, or maybe a combination of both.
A little bit of both, probably.
Yeah.
The truth is usually in the middle. So.
Over there.
And that's probably the most frustrating thing about it because once that came into the equation, we didn't know about that particular piece till the very, very end. And so it had really nothing to do with our portion, like Corey says. And so when that came out, you kind of, first you go, wow. Then you start asking the questions, how?
Yeah. You can see 1 million, 2 million, give or take, 30 million.
That's I'm wondering how big the project is. Is it a $300 million project or a $600 million project?
I think they were guesstimating 180 to 220.
Wow. Okay, so we're 20%.
That's from memory from like a year ago.
That's what I'm
saying. I have
it's
no idea.
Yeah,
it's a chunk.
Significant.
They didn't say the numbers.
No, that is literally the only number that came
they
out.
They just said 30 million.
If you were listening to
it. And then it had a 30% weight.
And I forget who it was that said it, just that they were talking. And I was just listening to it on the computer. So, because it's an open forum meeting.
Right.
And that number came out, that $30 million. And that they had 30% weight. It was weighted 30% of the project.
Did they say anything about bonding?
Not that I recall.
No, I don't. They didn't really get into too many details on
as far as how to finance it or how they're going to pay for it. Or, they just basically said that.
Well, I know they're already starting to collect the money, right? That tax has been building up for
it's
what,
been 2 years
now?
Yeah.
A year and a half, I think. I think it was July 17th. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's another piece of that information that obviously I can't share with you, but hopefully it'll come out soon. Draw your attention to that gradient.
Right. Well, yeah, a lot of this will make sense, I'm sure.
Will that make our Motorola radios obsolete? Or are they supposed
not
to be
your Apexes. Your Apexes, if they're P25 ready to go, you can run it on.
So one will talk to you, though.
Yeah.
Theoretically, yes.
That's it. That's P25 phase 2, that's what it's for.
Now, the encryption is one of the things that is the problem or the maybe the 1% of things that don't work across P25 is that your Motorola radios have proprietary encryption and your Harris system would have a different encryption and that part of it would not work. So, or at least that's their prediction.
Do you guys get encryption?
We don't.
We started to, and then we backed off because for that very reason.
We just didn't. We
started to, but every time somebody's radio died, the encryption was gone.
Yep.
So every time you had an operation, half of them worked.
Well,
is this Marshall's encryption or West Valley's?
In DC, there was a police chief and a fire chief, I think, from DC. I think it was the APCO meeting, the National APCO meeting recently, talking about how important it is to get all your public safety folks to talk about encryption, because the initial was like, well, let's just have the SWAT team, let's just have this. Mm-hmm. As soon as you have a medical on it, you send a medical unit into that situation.
Yeah, they're blind.
Communicate. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, they have to communicate. Now you use encryption. So it's kind of like you should do it.
You could do it all at once.
It has to be an all or nothing.
All at once. Right.
Because you can't have your SWAT guys talking here. It's the same thing. When they key up, guess what? It may not be another SWAT guy that gets to them. It may be some patrol dude that happens when everything comes apart that gets to them first. And if you can't talk to that guy, what good is it?
Yeah.
I mean, for a long time, we didn't even put SWAT channels on our radios, on our patrol guys, because it was like taboo. Right? Well, we just came back in just recently and said, no, well, if we got a channel and we got room on the radio, it needs to be there. Yeah. It may not be in a primary position, but it needs to be there. Yeah. Heck, if I could take every single channel in the state of Utah and put it on my radio, which I can now with APEX, mm-hmm. I would. I mean, it may take you a while to find it, but...
Yeah, if you're in a situation,
if it was there, why 75? Keep it back from it?
Right. I know.
Does anybody know what is the mandate on P25? I'm thinking going back on this this 4 to, I heard 4 to 8. You heard 5 year build out on Harris.
I think what the obligation of UCA is that once they get to the final contractual terms and implementation plan, then they'll obviously have the obligation to deliver to their customers the effects and dates and what's going to happen and when. And I don't think that can even be close to being summarized right now.
Until they get it finalized.
Right. And now with the protest, until they get into that, because,
So are we going to struggle through another Olympics?
I don't think it'll last that long, but who knows?
The Olympics is, what, 20?
That might motivate. Unless they go to 2026, and there is a possibility that if the others are forced to back out or can't fulfill, then Salt Lake might be asked, would you be willing to do
step up,
especially since most of our facilities are all fully up and functioning.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, we could probably do that.
Better than what they were back in 2012.
Well, that could be a good thing, because it could at least make an issue of resolution, and it might speed up the implementation.
It could influx federal dollars, too. Just like last one.
Right after 9/11,
yeah.
We got tons.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Changed the whole game.
Well, you remember, because I was here with Corey back when UCAN was created. I'm a good friend of Craig Dearden, who was the public safety commissioner when they put UCAN together back in 96, 97, 98. And I remember the mess of that, just trying to get us all together and singing Kumbaya. There was a lot of issues over that.
We're trying to deal with it with our county and RMS and CAD now.
Yeah,
trying to keep people on the whole.
Yeah.
Keep the project together, at least the consortium together. Who cares about what it is we're on? It's just keeping everybody together, working together.
Exactly.
That's the hard piece.
Yeah. I've heard you've got some real challenges with that. Consolidated CAD implementation.
Oh, just not to just be a working guy in that mess.
Yeah. You'd rather go get a root canal, right?
Yeah,
get it over. Yeah, get pain medication at the end, right? You get a reward. Okay, anything else on that, or have we beat that?
I think we beat it.
It's probably good information, but it's obviously more to come. And I would invite every RAC member to listen to the UCA meeting, especially on this topic as it goes forward.
Where can I find?
Just do a search.
Utah Public Notices will get you there.
Yep.
Yeah,
you go there and you go search for UCA and
UCA
all of it's there.
Okay.
Yeah. So we are not sending anything. You made that recommendation.
Do we want to? I mean, it's just... I can tell you, I think they're keeping me aware of it. Yeah, they're going to be.
And well, after hearing you saying how involved you were up front.
Here's what gave me a little bit of comfort. I was real nervous just because it was, we really done all of our due diligence. But it's maybe in a positive way, the protest I feel good about, because that's going to cause some pause and some further digging.
Keep everybody a lot more honest.
Yeah, and maybe, having to defend some research and whatnot. I don't know how that's going to work. I have no idea how a protest works, what the basis of those protests is going to be, but at least when those competitors are questioning one another. And I don't know what's going to be released either, because I don't know if they have to disclose elements of their, because of proprietary stuff, they can obviously keep. But there may be elements of each proposal that are going to have to be shared with one another. I just don't understand completely how the protest
works. It becomes public record. I mean, the entire RFP and everything, it will be disclosed.
Yeah, and so at that point in time, depending on how far they're down the road, could
score sheets and everything will come out.
Those
little notes.
I was real careful about
those notes in the margin. You should have
wrote that. Mike's not sweating.
I'm serious.
No, we were asked about that, and we knew that could be out there. So yeah, it was. I stick behind the things I said and did, you know, in terms of what I saw and what my concerns were. So we'll see where that goes. I just think it brings me comfort because of that being lodged, that it's going to have everybody have to pause and a little bit more work is going to have to be done. Because I have to be honest too, is it my own bias of just 30 years of something that's always worked? Am I afraid to do anything else?
And there's people out there. I'll tell you, you can go on the internet today and you can find people that will, big agencies that will say, hey, Harris all the way. Mm-hmm. And there are people that will say Motorola all the way. I mean, if there is, I mean, what they've been on plays a part in their experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things that I think goes into that is because they're so technical, it's the system design is so critical to its quality of delivery of service. Yeah. More so than just maybe the product. And so if an organization under, you know, maybe they're really highly motivated on keeping the cost down as low as they can, so they build a bare bones system. Well, that company gets a real bad rap because it doesn't meet maybe what the requirements are and the needs of the system. Versus, I can tell you, like the site references that we did in Indianapolis, they made a ton of money for the system, plus a ton of money for support, even though we have a lot of their own people doing maintenance and support. It's like, wow, you get a bundle of money to throw at this. If it didn't work, I would be really, really surprised, because it's not for a lack of money.
But you have to do that when you're changing systems, though, because one of the things that we're losing is a huge amount of institutional knowledge. UCA, having been all of their techs, all of their people have been so invested in this, they know how to solve any problem that comes up, which is why it's so darn reliable. And I think you're going to have, if you switch, you have to build up that institutional knowledge again.
That's right.
And that is something that's going to take a long time.
Base, yeah.
About $30 million.
That's one of Andy's big concerns. Yeah. He's like, look, I know Motorola. Mm-hmm. I know it inside and out. Mm-hmm. When certain things are happening, I know exactly where to go to look and fix. But with Harris, it's going to play differently. And now I got to learn all of that and figure it out.
We'll see. Okay, I think we've beaten it enough. All right. Do we have a reason to go into closed session for any reason? Do we have any reason for that? Okay. Any action items in the closed session? Obviously not. Other business? Yes, Katie.
So after the last meeting, it was discussed that most of you wanted to have your appointment or your membership reappointed to this committee for this following year. So. Chief Matthew wrote a letter. We sent it to Mayor Caldwell on his behalf, and he was out for the holiday, so he's back now. He said he'll have that decided in the next day or two. And then whatever he decides, we'll send, if he decides it's okay that we reappoint you, we'll just send new reappointment letters out. And then it was kind of discussed, I don't know if we wanted to add another member.
What I mentioned to Wayne was that we lost Kevin Burns through his resignation from the County Sheriff's Office. And one of the things that, rather than just go out and try to find someone from that area or do something, wait till, because it says we can have up to like 12 members. And so we could have four, we could have 12, we could have any number in between. And to rather than say, let's just kind of go find somebody in their organization, maybe wait till next year and just find some, you know, wait till the whole reappointment and depending on who gets reappointed, make sure we have a good cadre of representation across the Wasatch Front Council area. unless somebody feels otherwise. But that's Wayne's input made sense to me in terms of saying, well, if we just go and find someone, these spots that we hold are not necessarily organizational spots. They're just making sure the entire Wasatch Front is properly covered. And so it was kind of like, should we allow the chair of Wasatch Front Regional Council to make that decision when he's, when he or she is making that decision for all of the members rather than just trying to only place one? But how do you guys feel? Do you feel we need the additional member? And if so, is there someone out there that we would say would be a good contributor to this organization?
I'm not opposed to replacement. I hate committees that get so big that it's hard to arrange meetings and too many people don't come, but at this meeting, where it's easy to miss because you know there'll be a good representation also. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't care.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was at. I wasn't that. And I know we have the sheriff from Morgan, which.
Sorry, Morgan.
And the Weaver 911 Center serves Morgan and Weaver, and so hopefully that person can be a spokesperson for any coverage issues, 911 issues within the Weaver Morgan area. But if you felt like we needed to get somebody, I don't know. That's. I'm indifferent too about the whole issue. But he makes a good point in saying, well, if we're asking for us to be kept members for one more year, maybe we just wait till next year and then they select from all the candidates that are interested. And the other thing is, we don't have a ton of issues. We're trying to find issues to say, okay, one of the things, and I'll be real honest with you, is the chair of this, is that. There's some things coming down the road in the 911 world and in the radio world, obviously, that we want to be concerned with. But the way we were created legislatively, we're autonomous from really UCA directly and or even the operations committee. Some of us sit on the operations committee. They're struggling with trying to find their identity and find out who they are and what they do. And we put some things together to say to the board, but we have an opportunity to go meet with the board if we'd like, but we're just not generating a whole lot of issues that we have to oversee. But hopefully, if something does happen significantly, we are in a position to be able to do something about it. But I just don't want to waste people's time.
Yeah.
If you know, a lot of things to meet, we met in October and then we waited until January. That's the other thing, is when do you want to meet next? We want to wait a couple of months to see what kind of falls out. Some of the stuff at the UCA level.
I would say, yeah, a couple of months with the option that if something comes up in the legislature that we can get together that if we need to.
So you want to, we're in January, you want to go 1st of April? April 8th or 9th or something?
Something about right.
Okay, it's good with that. And if anything comes up, we can. Carl makes a good point legislatively as a result of this. I don't know of any legislation that's going forward in regards to UCA this legislative session. The only thing I've heard is that some of the telcos were wanting to get some things done. And some of it was, I think,
release of liability,
yeah.
Which after the 911 fiasco last week with CenturyLink, I hope falls flat on its face.
Yeah.
Because that is, and I think
you
we
can't
should,
release them from liability.
Yeah, we should, if that does come out, I think I would really feel strongly about pushing back against that and saying, no, we all have responsibility. You do not get a get out of jail free card. That's extremely important if that comes out.
Okay, so we'll meet, what day on April do you want to find your calendars?
The 8th is a Monday.
I'm out of town 8th, 9th, and 10th.
What does April 2nd look like for everybody?
Should hear
me. I'm good.
He wants us to come. I'm not, unfortunately.
16th?
The morning, and not and the afternoon of the 2nd, I can do, but just not the morning.
Could do afternoon.
I can
do afternoon.
Yeah.
So April 2nd?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What time, I'm
1 o'clock?
1 o'clock. That'd be good.
That works for you.
You may be here, the chief may be here.
I could do a phone bridge for an hour, but I have lieutenants meeting at 2.
Okay.
So.
And we will be at our new office at that
date. I could be on the phone
date
for an hour.
Just down the street?
We'll actually be at the north end of the gateway.
Oh, that's right.
So we're moving in on March 1st. So we'll send out our new information and I'll send out the calendar invite with that new address.
Okay, great.
Chief, before we close, I guess, how responsive is UCA to everybody, like technically wise? I come from the technical side. Like, how responsive are they to handle your radios, program your radios, make a change that you need?
I troubleshoot all the way out to the seat. I can troubleshoot my consoles and everything all the way to the seat level, and I don't have any. I hand off to.
We do our own program.
We do all our own stuff. So.
I mean, yeah, we call them periodically, but it just takes a couple of days.
Ultimately, who usually takes care of like your ratings in the end? Is it Robert?
Yeah, Robert usually comes out. So.
How responsive is he usually?
You know, it takes a little bit of work to get a hold of him to get the stuff changed.
Yeah, like all our base station radios and our fire station, they started sight monitoring on their own up there off of a simulcast system out of Yates County. And I went with Mike Christensen and Robert saying, something's changed because now the radios are wandering off and not hearing the operation channels in the stations. So it took some convincing, and I still don't think they're convinced that something changed. Well, from the process of them in the stations not hearing the radio traffic to the time they were actually fixed was 2 weeks. And it was back and forth, going back and forth. Robert saying, Robert, I need these loads. That guy was doing everything. The only thing he had to do was reply to my email. Really, download the code, reply to my email, dump in the radio. It was 2 weeks from start to end. And this is, I've noticed it's been like that or worse lately, especially. I don't know.
It's like they've had a restructuring, is what it seems like. Because I know, like, I've called to get, you know, whoever was the point of contact at first. Now it's a different person each time. It seems like it's changed.
Is it James? Is that what you're doing with?
I don't know who James is. I'd have to look through my emails, to be honest with you, because it's changed a time or two, and I haven't met him in person, so.
Okay.
We can certainly ask Dave or anybody come and give us kind of an overview of the organization that's changed and how do we get involved with people and be responsive and, you know, area of concern. We can put that on the agenda for next meeting. I can invite him to come and just address organizational changes and how best for us to get along with anybody within UCA. Just once again, politically talk to them about it. Maybe they tune up a little bit and make sure they're responsive.
Do we want to wait that long or just have them respond in an email to? I mean, that's probably something they can just address email-wise, I don't know.
Yeah, I can.
So we don't wait 3 months.
Yeah, we can do that. If that's sufficient, you don't need a face-to-face.
No,
I'm in right now. So.
Basically, the short of it, I'd love to be a little more responsive.
Right.
That's it.
All right, I'll relay that to them and say, hey, customer service, help us out here. Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
All right. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Great. Thank you. Good dialogue today, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.